Hello, Graham here from the Product Ops Chronicles. This episode is supported by the Product Mind community, the world's only safe space online community specifically for product professionals to discuss and be supported for their own mental health and well-being. It's totally free forever. In this episode, we touch on the challenges the role of product management has and how these impact on one's own mental health. If you feel like you need to talk to somebody in this area, the community is available right now at www.productmindcommunity.com. Hope you enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome to the Product Ops Chronicles with myself, Graham Reed, my usual co-host and Product Ops pal, Antonia Landy. Welcome back, Antonia.
Hello, lovely to be here.
Today, I'm privileged that we're joined by my very good friend, Bex Yelland, VP of Product at Orenco, and also separately a partner in crime as we run the Product Mind community together. And we'll talk a little bit about that further down the line. Bex, lovely to have you here. Please do introduce yourself.
Hi, Graham, Antonia. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really pleased to be here, although I am by no means a product ops professional. I'm a product ops evangelist and supporter, let's say. I've been in the product world for 20 plus years. I've lost count, but basically it's been there since the very beginning, before product was even a title, really. I've had some very strange titles in my time, executive producer, service manager, things like that. And I've done media, I've done finance, and now I'm wonderfully placed in climate tech, and I couldn't be happier.
Awesome. Yeah, lovely. Thank you. So today we're not going to talk about products. We're not going to talk about data. We're not going to talk about process. We're not going to talk about strategy. Today we're going to talk about you, about everybody watching, how you as a person, not your job title, are supported, how you thrive in product operations, but actually, you know, much more widely than that. And so we're going to take a little bit of a slightly different track today. It's not just really about product operations. This is about product. This is about tech as a whole. And actually, it's about any person in any role. In product operations and in product specifically, we are quite often, alone. It's a lonely role. There's very few people compared to kind of many other roles. We used to think of product management in comparison to teams like engineers or sales to be a very lonely one, very small staffed, and product operations tends to be even smaller than that. Just before we started recording, Antonio and I were just saying, vast majority of companies where product operations is even a thing, it's a team of one, and it will be a team of one for quite a while until it really does build and grow. Given the scope of today's topic, I'm very pleased to introduce also the Product Mind community as a guest supporter for today, along with our very good and long-time friends, the Product Led Alliance. The community is a dedicated safe space specifically for product professionals to talk, to listen, to share, and get peer support for whatever is on their mind inside or outside of the job. We'll just touch upon this a little bit later on and where you can go to join. It's totally free. Antonia, you recently delivered the opening keynote for the Product Operations Festival, courtesy of our lovely friends at the Product Led Alliance, discussing exactly this topic of being the one person in product operations within a business. It was super successful. It resonated with a lot of people, both during and after. Over to you to talk us through the key points of that.
Yeah, of course. And I'm actually so glad that we're having this discussion sort of out in the open, recorded, right? Because I think while many of us have these chats on the sidelines, talking about this a lot more openly will even help us feeling like we are not alone, even if maybe we may be the sole XYZ role at a particular company. But in order to give that talk, I actually looked at my past experience and I realized, even outside of product, I started at quality assurance. I was frequently the first and only person of my kind in a company, right? I was the first and only QA person. Then I was the first and only PM. And then I was the first and only product ops person. And the interesting thing about that is that, yes, we can talk about the strategies of, you know, being the person that needs to strategize and execute. We can talk about having to set things up from zero to one. But I think the conversation we need to have more is what it feels like to be by yourself, what it feels like to not have another peer. And yes, while you have team members who are on the same sort of org structure as you, while you will have a manager, the fact that you have a responsibility and a role that nobody else has can feel very lonely. And it very much opens you up to questions of things like receiving criticism, right? If I am the only product ops person in a company, and I repeatedly keep hearing from peers that they don't see the value in product ops, how easy is it for me to eventually start hearing, I don't see the value in you, right? And having these discussions out in the open and not shying away from saying, yes, it can be incredibly fulfilling. It can also be incredibly hard and mentally and emotionally taxing to be in that role, I think is the logical next step, which is why I'm really excited to have this conversation today.
Absolutely. And before I hand over to Bex, just, you know, one thing that came to my mind, and I just remembered that I thought this back when you gave that talk a couple of weeks ago as well, real by chance. You know, you're talking about as well, when you're in that team of one and you have got those people around you, those, you know, product managers and your line manager, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you're looking at allies. You're talking about people that have your back. And the difference between those that may have your back by contract only, because of that org structure, they do until, you know, there is something that really does affect them, versus more typically, you know, people that are in your team and have a similar role and similar goals, you know, mm-hmm. tend to, you know, be much greater allies, you know, pushing in absolutely that same direction. Bex, you know, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so I think we were talking about this before, weren't we? Whilst I'm not a product ops person, I certainly have probably quite a lot of my leadership career as a product person had to deal with a very similar situation. But I think it also is something that resonates for single-serving ICPMs who go into startups as well. So I think the topic of conversation is more widespread than maybe we'd initially thought it would be. From my own experience, I've worked in massive teams. So, you know, for example, like in a global payments firm, there were like, I think, 80 or 90 of us in product and design. And whilst there were a couple of other product leaders, they were very different in terms of their functional responsibility to myself, you know, sort of more of the compliance and platform side than I was more around the customer experience and growth. And whilst we were able to have connections in terms of the hierarchy, the role I was doing, the impact I had, the responsibility I had, and the challenges I had in my role day to day weren't replicated or mirrored in my colleagues. And I think that's often the place that a lot of people find themselves is, you know, especially in, you know, any sort of tranche of product, is there is an element of loneliness there. Mm. Now, who am I going to test these thoughts against? Yes, you build up good relationships and collaboration sort of is there with other colleagues. But if that is, you know, that 0-to-1 test that you want to make before you make, you know, you look like an idiot in front of your colleagues or your boss, God forbid, how do you test those out with somebody who understands and has walked a mile or so in your shoes? And so I've looked elsewhere, I've looked externally, and my solution to that problem for me was communities. Digging deep in, you know, immersing myself with as many people who are similar to me as possible. And so obviously that wasn't the driving force behind joining the Product Mind or, you know, the community that I founded, which is separate to the Product Mind, that was, you know, more around what it that community gives to other people. It was never about what it was going to give to me. But it's like a wonderful byproduct that's happened, like the connections that I've managed to have, the friendships that have blossomed out of that, you know, and being able to rely on those friendships, right, Graham? You know, the fact that you refer to me as your friend, oh, that's just lovely, because we've only met in person like twice. And yeah, we met on a thread on LinkedIn, you know, it's just crazy. But friendships can blossom from a thread on LinkedIn, who knew? And the connections that you make from those people, and the support you get from those people, and the safe place that you get from being able to, you know, riff on ideas and challenge each other on sort of concepts and thoughts. Oh, I think it's absolutely phenomenal. And for me, that's like the single best advice I could give anyone is looking, if you find yourself on your own as a single serving, whatever that might be, the best thing that you can do to survive and thrive is to reach out and find the community that works best for you.
Yeah, I mean, and you've touched on a load of things there, but I think there's one element there, and I know that you are very passionate about this, which is kind of having that psychological safety, you know, that feeling that actually you have a space that you can be yourself, that you can, like you say, you can riff on those ideas, you can test things out. There is a multitude of different, you know, setups and cultures, you know, across businesses that predominantly are very, very focused on kind of being very good, very efficient, very forward thinking, you know, and this idea that, look, you know, bring me answers. Don't bring me questions. Don't bring me half-baked ideas. Just bring me an answer and go with it. Well, that's lovely. But, you know, how do you test those answers? How do you work those out? You can't always do that in your head. You know, you need that space, and you need that, you know, you need that sounding board to test these ideas on. Exactly the same as we do product management, you know, in terms of testing, A/B testing, beta testing, whatever. You know, we're testing these things out with a small subsection to make sure we've got it right. We don't just go off half-cocked to the entire market. So how is then it so different to how we're formulating our ideas in the first place?
Yeah. And I think this is also why you really need to have subject matter peers, right? Because if you do this with your manager, or if you do this with peers that are in the same hierarchy level as you, but nevertheless in a different role, there's always a level of explaining you have to do. And I think even that explaining you have to do about your own problem space is to a certain extent inherently biased, right? It's very, very hard, especially when you're in the problem yourself, to give an objective overview of this is the problem, this is what I've identified, this is how I intend to proceed. And I think even this is what I've identified, right? If you have a subject matter peer to say, well, have you identified these other things? Or this is how I would have done it, right? That really a person who has been in that situation and has navigated it successfully before, that is invaluable. And that's not usually something you can get from someone who is subject matter adjacent.
Interesting. You said something there, and it's gone from my mind now. But typical. I mean, we're talking about this idea of allies, you know, here where people have got your back, people that are there to help and support you. How do you go about gaining those allies, particularly from, you know, Antonio, from a product operations perspective, you know, where we are some people that work across the entire business.
We are
objective. We sometimes feel ourselves separated from product, which tends to be the home team within the business. And so we're already separating ourselves from the business.
Right.
How do we go about gaining allies in the product ops space? And Bex, I'm going to come to you then about kind of much more widely within product as well.
Yeah. So I think to preface that, I think there is definitely, there is a reason we're separated. And I think it's a good thing that we are, because we are this, as much as possible, objective link, right, between what is happening within the organization and within product and engineering. And because we are not part of any one specific team, we do lack that bias that prevents us from saying what objectively we need to make more connections there, or objectively speaking, you know, we need to improve on this and this process, or, you know, data access, whatever it is. But I think the topic of gaining allies itself is so, so vast in product operations. And I think there is such a big difference between having to do that as a team of one and being product ops employee number two, where the pure fact that a product ops person number one exists means that there is already a level of acceptance in there, right? And I think for some of us who have stepped into this team of one role where it was the first product ops hire of that organization, it has been incredibly difficult. And the result of that sometimes is product ops doesn't work for this company, or this company is not ready for it, or there is too much resistance to change. And I think that's exactly why this is such an important conversation to have, because it doesn't always work out, right? But to me, getting allies has usually looked one of two ways. Either you get people excited about your mission, right? So this is the end state, this is what we're trying to achieve. And you find people who share that same vision or that same goal. They're like, fantastic, I want that to be, you know, how we operate. So let's make it happen. If you can't find that, you have to become a little bit more practical, right? And it's a little bit more of a, you know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours sort of thing, where it's like, look, let's improve this one specific area and I give you this much time back. Or let's, you know, test this out together. And yes, it's going to be a little bit more difficult in the meantime, but I promise that if it doesn't work out, we don't have to keep doing it, right? So it becomes a little bit more of a negotiation rather than a really value-driven allyship, I think, but yeah, it is possible.
Yeah. No, I agree. Thanks more widely, you know, for product management as well, you know, and in any role, realistically, you know, what is the importance of those of having those allies
within the org? You mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I think this has been a perennial challenge for product in general for forever. You know, we went on a bit of a fact-finding mission probably a decade or so ago, when there was the number of product people in the world was a lot less than it is today, which is around circa a million. I think, you know, we were looking to centralized thought leaders and gurus to help us to define what we did so that we can use that language to convince people who didn't quite understand what product did, that there was value. Like, we don't cut code, we don't design stuff, we're not selling, so what do you do? And I think that pattern of looking for your ally and looking for champions internally, in order that it's not always you banging your head against a brick wall and making that statement, that you've got other people who are like, oh no, you should trust product because, or you should include product because. And it's not always product going, include us, talk to us, please, don't forget us. Because that sounds a little bit desperate and it isn't always going to go the way you expect it to. And so finding those champions, those allies, as you call them, is absolutely essential, so that once they're convinced and understand the value, they can represent it on your behalf and it just lands better. Because if people don't quite believe it, everyone's heard of sort of, you know, the passive aggressive nodder in the meeting. Oh, yes, totally understand. They're not going to say to your face all the stuff that they think that you're saying that they don't believe. But outside of that meeting, they're going to say it to anybody who will listen. Whereas if you've got a champion or an ally speaking on your behalf, they're far more the doubters are far more likely to articulate to your champion or ally the things they're not convinced of. And so the conversation could end up being far more powerful and the outcome being far better.
Yeah, that's super interesting. Like, I think this notion of, right, these people are there when you're not there, right? They are there. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be to respond to doubters, but even just to think, ah, Antonia might want to know about this, or this is another piece of interesting data, right, that we should maybe share with them.
Yes, spies, as I like to call them. Sorry. They're going and talking to the developers again. They haven't contacted you.
Does this come back to this argument that has been doing the rounds again for the last 6 months of proving the value of product? I mean, we're not even talking about product operations now, but the value of product people, the value that, you know, that they are actually bringing to a business, you know, where to, you know, many other roles have been around for so much longer, very traditionally been around for much longer, and are very easy to pinpoint the value that they bring, you know, in sales, in marketing, in support teams, in the engineering teams. You know, the things that they're doing are very tangible in terms of their output and the value that they are bringing to the company. In most cases, either they're delivering this physical product or they are bringing income in. And is this the same? Is this a part of that same problem, you know, that we're trying to once again have to constantly prove what we're doing, prove the value, prove that we're worth listening to in an organization?
I mean, yes, but I also think it's cyclical, right? We had this with design, we had this with UX research, we had it with product at the very beginning. And now we're having it with enabling roles. We had it with agile coaching. Now we're having it with product ops. So yes, but it's also something that nearly every function has gone through, right? So I feel like in product ops, we have a little bit of a tendency to hone in too much on that and on, you know, getting really frustrated with this and saying, well, we shouldn't have to explain ourselves, right? Like, this clearly so obviously has value. Just let us get on with it and you will see the value. But I think really reminding ourselves of the fact that we are not the first people to have had to go through this. It helps me, I think, calm that inner voice a little bit sometimes.
I 100%. And I think what happens a lot, and I'm like one of those really annoying, super confident people. I have more confidence than I have any right to be. You know, I know that I've got that level of self-awareness. Yet I will still struggle, like, with when those the doubters or the challenges come in. And so you need to lean back in on going back to the community thing, if you don't mind, and finding, you know, a cohort of people that you can go to and sense check the things that you're being challenged with day to day. Because you don't always have the answer to respond to that. And you can sometimes be de-seated in your confidence to or your ability to tackle some of those pushbacks. Yet when you lean into your, you know, into the community support mechanism, hopefully that you'll always find somebody there to say, no, that, you know, what are they talking about? That is a crazy concept. Of course you're right. And this is, and because. But you can't always rely on your own resilience and confidence in order to be able to deal with that. So it's imperative for you to find, you know, that support network. I think, you know, I think it's incredibly important.
Yeah, I think this idea of the sense check, right, and even going in the other direction sometimes, and I have done this. I didn't allow myself to quit jobs I really should have quit, very much to the detriment of my own mental well-being, right? And then having somebody else who can say, this is a toxic environment, you know, you have done everything you could, now it's time to move on. Actually having somebody outside of yourself, outside of your company, outside of your own environment, but still with that experience to say that in a moment where you need it the most, to me it's been a lifesaver.
We've so far we've touched upon, you know, the the importance of kind of gaining those allies, gaining those people to help you do your job, to be able to do the things in your job, be more comfortable in doing your job. And of course, you know, there is absolutely the much wider side of that, which is having those people around you to support them when actually for your own benefit, not just for the benefit of your career, of your role, of what you're bringing to the company, but of you yourself. And the pressures, the ongoing pressure that product in a business consistently has, particularly when we do come back and talk to this constant questioning of the role. You know, and then so you said a moment ago, yeah, absolutely, you know, it is cyclical, you know, product ops is going through it, absolutely. Product has gone through, and I feel product has been going through it very recently all over again. Yep. You know, so many people questioning, you know, the value that it's bringing, or the value that many people are bringing, you know, that are in role, whether they're good enough for the role. And Bex, you and I have talked to death about this whole piece of, you know, this potential idea of a two-tiered, you know, market of people that are, you know, in this small 1% who, you know, are doing all the millions of things that you must do as a product manager, otherwise you're not good. And then everybody else, all of a sudden, it's exhausting. And having people around you in role, in company or outside in those external communities is also vitally important to help you.
You can call out when you're stepping too far. Yeah, but then calling out on your behalf. You know, yes, you could get involved in that and you could try to fix that. Mm. And to a certain extent, there is an expectation that product as a discipline, whether it's ops or traditional, are going to be stepping into and fixing a load of those issues because you have a level of understanding and appreciation and capabilities, but you don't have to. And it's not actually expected. And just because, you know, some thought leader has said you need to be all these things to all the people all the time to prove, you know, to continually prove your value, doesn't mean that contextually day to day you have to commit to that. And to have somebody who's sitting side by side with you either internally or looking in, you know, as a supporter from somewhere outside the organization, to be able to point out to you where you're possibly overstretching yourself, I think is, because we do. That is what, I don't know what it is about product people. I don't think I've met one yet that hasn't been like that. That we want to fix. We're fixers, right? We're doers. We're fixers. We're like action oriented, you know, to a fault. That doesn't mean we need to do all the things for all the people all the time. And having someone to remind us of that, I think, is really important.
Yeah, I think this is one of the pieces of sort of thought leadership that has been floating around more recently, where it's like, oh no, you as a product person have the agency to change things. Mm. And I'm all for agency. I'm all for, you know, instead of complaining, trying to see what you can address, what you can fix. But that is such a slippery slope. And simply as a reminder that you as an individual contributor will never be able to change an entire organization by yourself, right? That just has to be said. I think that nobody can refute that, right? I don't think I'm saying anything controversial here, but so many of us try to do that because we're enthusiastic, because we think, especially early on, we have all the answers, because we think, well, I must do product one way. If I don't do it that way, then I'm not allowed to call myself a PM. So having this perfect storm and now somebody coming in saying, well, you have the agency to change all of that. Why aren't you doing it? Right. Mm-hmm. Having somebody else, going back to that sense check, having that community of people who have been there, have made those mistakes and can tell you proceed with caution, or can tell you are doing too much. And the worst thing is that no matter how much you do, some things just will not work out. So save your energy, right? Having those people with that kind of level of experience and pragmatism around you in communities is invaluable.
Yeah. I mean, it's tricky because they don't always know the details internally. Sure. Because, you know, how it's not a whip type thing. It's not like, you know, there's a real clarity on when you've gone too far. this is such a weird analogy, but I use it all the time. Like, how do you know when you've gone so far? And I use the analogy of jet spraying. So I love an annual jet spray. I get my jet spray out. It's nearly 23 years old. It's doing, you know, I only use it once a year. That's probably why. And I'll go out onto the patio and I'll start jet spraying. And I jokingly said a few years ago, how do you know when you've gone too far? Like, I've done the decking, I've done, you know, the pathways. I'm now on the, I'm lucky enough now in recent years to have a driveway. I'm sure I didn't always have one. But how do you know when you've gone too far? And my mum just went, when you're in your next door neighbor's garden, that's when you know you've gone too far. There's a clear line, like, you know, you've gone too far. Like, there's people pointing and looking at you like, there's the crazy woman who doesn't know when to stop. But in the business day to day, that line isn't quite so clear. You don't really know when you've gone too far. You just don't. And so having people who understand, who get you, understand your job, and are able to say, okay, like, in a team of one, this is the beginning and end of what I need from you. This is the beginning and end of what I think other people in the business need from you, I think is really, really essential. And whilst I talk a lot about that community support, I don't think people outside of the business are going to know that. So going back to your point of finding the allies within the business, I think that's essential.
I think Bex, you and I know we're so passionate about this, you know, living in the real world as well, about what, you know, coming back to this idea of agency, what you can actually do. And you will only know that, and Antonio, you touched upon this as well, you know, you only know that in that business you're in. You know what you can achieve, what you won't be able to achieve, whether you're a leader, a manager, or an IC, you know, there's only so much that you can do, so much that you can achieve. You're only that one person. You have your limits, and this is, you know, those lines really do seem to, you know, being deliberately smudged and blurred by you know, booksellers and gurus and whatnot on social media. And that's one of the great things as well about having those either internal or external allies, is likely they're walking in the same shoes as you. They're probably working in very similar organizations. They're living probably very, very similar professional lives. They've been there, they've done that. In the real world, they're not part of this Silicon Valley micro bubble whereby money is free flowing and anybody can go and do anything if we just throw enough money at it. 99% of businesses just don't work that way. And so actually surrounding yourself with people that
people
are probably
in the Silicon Valley
the same.
Think it's the real world though, Graham. That's part of the problem.
What's that, sorry?
Well, I think people in Silicon Valley think that their experiences are part of the real world. And so while they might be specific to that school of thought, the problem is they don't often translate. And I guess that's your point, right? Sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you, but I think it's an important distinction.
Yes, you know, you are absolutely right. I think it's understanding that, you know, as those people that don't kind of live and breathe that sort of world and that sort of, you know, that utopia and that freedom to do absolutely anything and everything. We have to have a dose of reality. We have to put that with the people that we work with, that we support in our communities as well, and be there and talk people down a little bit, you know, from being very agitated. They can't change everything in their own business from their IC position. That's absolutely fine. You can't do that. And actually, let's support you with, you know, with that. To almost talk you down from that ledge a little bit, and let's, you know, to talk, you know, be a bit real worldy about this.
Devil's advocate, though, if you are going in as a product ops, so if I've got this wrong, I'm in good company, you will tell me. There is a level of expectation that you are going in as an IC professional to change. Like, that is what you've been brought in to do. So there's a level expectation, no matter what your experience is. You'd hope that the company will be hiring for the right level, the right amount of experience and an ability to work autonomously, but maybe sometimes they won't and think they'll just dip their toes into product ops, you know, do the, you know, the MVP investment in that function. How do you set that person up for success? Sorry, I've moved into questioning rather than answering. Is that okay?
No, absolutely fine. Antonio, go for it.
Yeah, like, this is, you have touched the core of what makes this role both incredibly exciting but also incredibly challenging. It's influence without authority on steroids. we are change agents. We are hired to change things, right? Exactly as you said. Nobody reports to us. We are not in the same team as people, right? We need to do that 100% through gaining allies, through showing our thought process and our reasoning and our plans, and hopefully having enough buy-in to be allowed to test our ideas, to be allowed to show that what we're there to do is a net positive. But it's absolutely the most challenging role in terms of having to influence without authority. Like, we are not, and I think like that's why when we talk about product ops as a part of a product leader's role, that's a really interesting dynamic, because they are people's line manager, right? If my head of product tells me we now need to do something X way instead of Z way, I'm going to do that, even though I don't believe in it, because that's my line manager and I'm going to get pulled up about it, right? If I, as a product ops person, advocate for a certain process change, for example, I need to be so much more deliberate in my communication, in the testing of that strategy, in showing why we're doing it, right? What the end goal is, because I do not have any sort of formal authority. Even if I'm the director of product operations, I will only ever have product ops people reporting to me, right? I don't line manage PMs. And that's actually a good thing, but it makes it very challenging.
Mm. Trade agents without agency? Is that what you're saying?
Well, we have agency. I think we just really, really need to use our influence more than the authority we're given.
It's not given, though. I think that's the point with agency. You have to find it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I think we talk a lot about agency, and you sort of go in going, I have agency, but it's not given to me. I have to create it for myself. And there's a difference.
Yeah, it's more like, especially if you step into a first product ops role, it's like you have, it's like a trial, right? Like, you're temporarily given a baseline of agency until you prove yourself. Right. Yeah. But that will quickly get revoked if that proving yourself doesn't work out for some reason.
Like, you're suckers for punishment. I mean, this is what we were doing in product like 10 years ago. I'd literally walk into a company, and I'm not kidding, I had people go, prove yourself. Go on then. Mm. What's all this about then? Go right. on. Go on. Hang on. So yeah, I think if you're in that situation and you have to find your own and dig deep for your own agency to create that ability to win the hearts and minds, let's say, of the people who need to be won over, it, you know, it can be a poison chalice role as well. Yeah.
Definitely. I think it's the only thing that will get you through this is sheer passion for the craft. Otherwise, you wouldn't be in that position.
And resilience.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But I think there is also that desire to just do good as well. And, you know, and everybody kind of has that, absolutely. But, you know, for me myself, you know, spent 10 plus years as a product manager. So, you know, it, for me, I get a lot of satisfaction out of kind of now seeing, and it makes me sound very old, but it's now seeing kind of the next generation of product managers kind of not going through the same things that I went through, kind of seeing where those problems are before they've appeared, you know, spotting those gaps and helping them along. Because I know I didn't have any of that, you know, when I was a product manager for so many years, I did it all and all by myself. So it's nice to almost be able to kind of almost give back a little bit and just help and solve those problems. This is a great piece to kind of come on to one of our final pieces now, is how can leaders support, you know, these teams of one? And again, whether it's in product operations or product management, you know, it's probably going to be very much the same. But how can, you know, any leaders watching, any heads of product, VPs, CPOs, you know, if you've got these teams of one in your teams and your departments, what can you do to help?
Well, that's Thanks,
do you
want to
go first?
Sure. I think making, so as a leader in general, like making sure that the problems of your team are your own problems, I think is part of it. That, you know, you're not sitting there from high on high, looking down and judging and sitting there with all the expectation, waiting for things to get, you know, delivered, you know, to your door. So understand the value of the delivery of a better outcome, the those problems being solved, and buying into those outcomes is essential. So if you are a leader who has made the decision to hire in a product ops professional, for example, you would have gone through the process of advocating for that function being filled. You would have gone through the process of finding the budget for that function to be filled. And it's now incumbent upon you to make sure that you're laying the ground for that before the person lands, for example, so they're landing and being set up for success from day one. And then it's your job to champion what that person is doing and understanding the benefit of that role and making sure that you are advocating for people to wait and see and understand that these things don't happen overnight. When I got first introduced to you, Antonia, I watched a video that you'd created about the product ops function. And I remember one of the things you said was that, you know, the way to land and show effectiveness quickly in product ops is to find that low hanging fruit so that you can show the value quickly. But the bigger projects, the ones that are going to be more impactful, that are going to be sustainable in terms of like creating a long term impact to the business and to the product function, they're not going to happen overnight. And so the advocacy you need in that leadership is going to be to protect or enable the senior leadership team to have the patience and understanding that those bigger, more impactful deliveries are going to take time. And it's the same as when you're launching a big product, right? You can do quick features and iterations, but if you're doing a massive transformation, a massive migration that's going to serve up either a new customer vertical or market vertical, that change, that delivery isn't going to be an overnight delivery. It's going to take time. And it's the same with product ops. If you're doing a big transformational launch or change, it's going to take longer, but it's going to have a bigger impact when it does arrive.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Love everything you said. I mean, so as far as specifically about product ops, right, as far as the prerequisites are concerned, I think everything you just touched upon, Bex, absolutely. And part of this is actually also touched in the Product Ops Manifesto, right? And it's, I really, really wanted to have those prerequisites in that manifesto, because I think this is, without those prerequisites, you will not be successful, right? Without that internal advocacy and that understanding that we are now committing to change as an organization and we are taking a new person into our group who will affect this change, right? And that it will take time and that it is not straightforward and that some of it will feel a little bit uncomfortable, right? It's going to be infinitely harder to make this role a success. I think as far as what leaders can do, another one is just make space for coaching, right? Mm-hmm. Like really invest time in this person's success. And if you feel like you don't have the necessary background or whatever it is, like find an external coach for this person that does help them, like give them the manager they need, you know, help them even just make space for them to engage in community, right? Make space for them to go to events, read some books, listen to other people who have had similar experiences or are going through similar things. But even also internally, find other change agents, right? And you may not have exactly the same role, right? You may not find another product ops person internally, but maybe you have a very enthusiastic, I don't know, senior PM who used to do a lot of this work before you came on board. Maybe you even have ops people in design or research, if you're lucky, certainly sometimes in more commercial teams. And sure, while it doesn't 100% align to your experience, these are people who have experienced the unwritten rules of the organization, right? Maybe the politics, maybe some of the things that should be tread on with caution, maybe some of the history of change that happened within that organization. So finding those people and tapping into their knowledge can be super beneficial as well.
And that, interestingly, that comes back to something we were talking a little bit about earlier, about how do, you know, the how do these people, you know, work, and also how do they grow? So right. in wider teams, people will learn off each other. Even if they're at the same level, someone will try something, someone will do something, someone will come in with different experience. And that is how everybody grows, by as much as looking to the people above them and around them. Certainly the people they work very closely with is a way that they will grow. And in a team of one, it becomes that much harder to learn from necessarily from people around you, particularly within your role. And so for managers to absolutely, as you've both said, it gives them the opportunities to work with others internally or externally, have those coaches, attend seminars and trainings and bits and pieces like that, because that is going to be where they will rely on a big part of their growth if they are not getting it kind of daily from peers working very, very closely with them.
Yeah, and I think really just calling out the community aspect as well. I mean, I joined the PLA Slack almost immediately after I got my first official product ops job, and that's over 4 years ago now, you know. And it's so funny, because I think what happened is that quite a few of us suddenly found ourselves in this role that was super ill-defined, and everybody was kind of panicking a little bit, going like, oh shit, there's no playbook for this, like, what do I do? But it also meant that the product ops community is so open. Like, I have not seen a single product ops person who won't just hop on a call, who won't just share, you know, a draft of whatever latest thing they were working on and ask for feedback, or really have mentors who do it like on a volunteering basis. Like, it's such a welcoming community. And I think that also happened a little bit out of necessity, because we have all just been figuring it out as we go along.
And I think, Bex, I absolutely agree with you there. You know, the PLA, particularly with product ops, you know, has been super supportive. The product operations community worldwide is an amazingly supportive environment. Yeah. I've, again, exactly the same as you, you know, I've been in and around that community for about 3.5 years, and I've never found anybody that, firstly, is not super open and willing to help and advise and guide and things like that. And I'm privileged as well to be able to give some of that back as well now. But also, there isn't any of this one-upmanship. There's none of this, oh my God, if you're not doing this in product operations, you're doing it right. Partly because we're all still figuring it out. Some of us that have been doing it for years still don't know half the stuff anyway. But also, we are very conscious. I think we've come through this world in the wider product of kind of gurus and one-upmanship and things like that, where actually we don't want it to become like that. So absolutely. And I will say as well, you know, coming back to, you know, the health and well-being side of things, you know, Bex, we probably would say exactly the same about the Product Mind community. The community that, as of this recording, is about 470 product managers, product people from all over the world, that their sole purpose for being there is to listen, to talk, to share, get support in whatever it is that's on kind of their minds, you know. And the only constituent, because there are lots of communities out there that deal with mental health. There are lots of communities, including the PLA, that deals with product management. Absolutely great. That intersection is unique. Very fortunate PLA is a partner as well of the Product Mind community. And it is that intersection of mental health and product. You know, people there are product managers, but they're not necessarily there to get help and support with being product managers. They're there to just get help and support for them individually, and to help them. And all of the things that we've been talking about today, about having allies externally, having people to talk to, bounce ideas off, share things, share their concerns, potentially with inside their organization, but they can't inside their organization for whatever reason. And once again, it's incredibly fantastic, supportive community. I've never once again seen anybody be anything other than fantastic and supportive.
Absolutely. There's lots of great people out there, that's for sure. Find those ones, listen to those ones, follow those ones.
Absolutely.
Unfollow does work on LinkedIn. I figured that out. You just have to keep on pressing unfollow and eventually the algorithm understands that you really mean it.
I'll try that.
Do it for your soul, Graham.
Final thoughts, anybody, before we wrap up for today? Antonia?
Yeah, being a team of one is tough, but it's also super rewarding and it's very much doable, right? I love going back to this idea of chosen family, right? You hear that sometimes in underrepresented groups. I think finding your chosen family in product ops, it has helped me immensely, right? It has helped me feel less alone. It has helped me sometimes stop questioning whether I'm crazy or whether what's really going on really is the way I see it. It has helped me move forward with very ambitious things that I thought were too ambitious to pull off. So it can be super rewarding. And we are out there, right? Like, we connect with us, and I don't just mean the three of us here, but connect with people within your community, build that support network, because it's one of the biggest things that can change your career.
I love that. Chosen family. I think that's a great term. Great term. Bex, anything to finish off with?
I mean, I think all I would say is that you don't always take into account how recent this whole notion of community and how people use LinkedIn to create these sort of ad hoc communities as well. Like, you find like-minded people, as we said earlier, you're on LinkedIn posts and on Thread on LinkedIn posts, and you can make connections in any way. That wasn't such a thing for product in general when we were having those same challenges. There were a few people who had a voice, but there wasn't really this sort of notion of like people en masse gathering organically and creating their own sense of community around them and discovering the chosen family, as you say, Antonia. So there's a level of, and this is my brain, I can't think of the word. There was a movie with Kate Beckinsale, and it's Serendipity. That's the one. There's a level of serendipity, you know, in the timing of this for product ops that you shouldn't overlook. That, you know, product ops as a profession, you know, getting to that critical mass and becoming more of a thing and an established, you know, more established, has happened around the same time as communities have become the norm, and that you're not the weird one if you're in a community. It's now just completely standard and accepted and normal to spend time with people that you've never met in a virtual environment, having a conversation and joining people, you know, and having that ability to join up together as well. So, you know, celebrate that serendipity, I would say, and benefit from it as much as you need to.
I love that. What a fantastic way to end. Bex, Antonia, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Antonia, to my co-host, Bex Yelland, special guest today. Do connect with all of us on LinkedIn, and please also do consider joining the Product Mind community at productmindcommunity.com, and of course, you know, the Product Led Alliance as well. Thank you to those guys and girls for facilitating this ongoing series. Thank you to everybody for watching today, and we look forward to welcoming you on the next episode of what podcast are we? Product Ops Chronicles. I'm 7 episodes in and I've now forgotten who we are. That was good, wasn't it?
You do so many, Graham.
Yeah, clearly, obviously. Thank you, everybody. Take care.
Thank you.